remember, I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we appreciate their support. It's 8:24 on a Wednesday evening. We're over here at the McGinn HQ, west of Lambeau Field, right? West? Do I know this town a little bit now?
Okay. Yeah, I would agree.
8:24. How's it going, Bob?
Good. The night after the election, it's kind of calmed down tonight here. And we're ready to have a super podcast, right, Mike?
Not in New York. Have you seen what's going on in New York
tonight? No.
Massive protests in the streets. Big giant. Just saw pictures of it on Twitter when I was sending out the...
Manhattan?
Yeah, right in front of Trump Tower.
Wow.
Hundreds and thousands of people just walking up and down protesting. Hmm. Interesting night, wasn't it?
Very much so.
But that's a topic for another day.
Okay.
So let's talk about this music.
You tell me.
So this is like the second time, I think, in the last 3 weeks that... you and I have looked at each other in the press box and said, what's this song? And then we decided to use it. I knew what this one was. This was a song called Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. Very popular. 2006, I think I said it came out. It got to, I think, number 2 on the charts or number 1 on the R&B charts or something. It was really highly rated in whatever genre it was classified in. Just a fun little song. Very popular. And I actually had heard it many, many years ago, but it was recently brought to my attention within the last year because one of my favorite TV shows is called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's a sitcom. And they have, you know, sitcoms have montages sometimes where, you know, music plays and then they go through a bunch of different scenes or whatever. They use that in one of the episodes, and it was pretty funny. So that's Crazy by Gnarls Barkley, and next week it'll be back to your choice.
Yeah, we'll come up with something.
Well, we don't have anything to talk about because our lives are not very interesting at this time of the year. We wake up, we work, we sleep. Sometimes we eat.
Now we got 3 road games in a row.
Yes, with Thanksgiving in between there.
It's going to be a blur, Mike.
It's going to be a very big blur.
Let's pray for good flight schedules.
And a train schedule. I'm taking a train from Connecticut to Philadelphia to get to the Monday night game after Thanksgiving.
The whole key is getting back is on time Monday morning. As quick as we can so I can get to that tape, Mike.
Well, that's your business.
Yeah, okay.
I'd rather just get to the place on time.
Yeah.
You ever missed a game?
I'll tell you one story on that, Mike, okay? I've been blessed. I've never missed a game. But at Miami one time in like 88 or 89, I almost missed the opening kickoff. Should I tell you what happened?
Yes.
Lee Rimmel, the wonderful Packer PR guy for... generations. Lee forgot to give me the media credential in the locker room that week. So I said, okay, Lee, leave it at Will Call, and I'll get it. Well, we had a lot of problems going in there. Mark Daniels from WGEE Radio was driving the car, or he was with us, I remember. So we're kind of late, and we didn't get to that Will Call till about games at 1 Eastern. It's probably 98 degrees, and we're hustling in there. It's probably 12:45 right now. And there was nothing left at Will Call. And there was no cell phones then. And I said, well, give me the phone. Or Mark Daniels says, just give me the phone. So the guy had a phone there, and he called. And Lee Rimmel said, I don't have a pass. And Mark Daniels said, well, he's got to have something. So Tom Bratz, the vice president, the forerunner, predecessor to Tom Ron Wolf, he kind of grabbed the phone from Lee and says, here, I got extra passes. Run this down on him again. So those guys went upstairs. I had to wait for the pass. The pass came. A tight press box at Miami. You been there, Mike?
Yes, I have.
All those little crevices and crannies.
And they have multiple press boxes, too.
Yeah. So it took me a minute or two once I got up there. And it was like about 1:03. And Mac Zendejas was the kicker for the Pack. And he was teeing the ball up. The wind blew it off the tee, Mike. I would have missed that kickoff. But because he had to re-tee, I was around the corner, plunked down, and saw it. Yep. That's the only time. So I did not miss.
So back then, did you have to watch tape on like VHS?
Yes.
Was it unbearable?
On a little tiny 22-inch TV for years. Whew. I don't know. It was better than nothing. It was fine by, fine with me.
Okay. So let's talk about the Colts. That's the most recent thing we saw. Was it 31-26, right?
Yes, it was. The Colts Packers were a seven-point dog.
Seven-point dog, yep. As high as 7.5 from what I saw.
Ended up at 7. I checked that.
Okay.
And the Colts won it by 5. Mike McCarthy was immune to those kind of home defeats as a touchdown or favorite or more, Mike. It just never happened. It was one of his greatest strengths. His teams did not play down. I missed a game the other day. There was a playoff game against the Giants in January of 08. A regular season game against Houston in 08. Four times in the first 9 years. And now he's lost. Of the last 9 home games, 3 were defeats when he was favored by 7 or more. Detroit and Chicago, and then the Colts. It's terrible. You just cannot do that at home and be a good team. And it's awful. It's an indictment of McCarthy and, his, and this team.
I didn't expect it going in. I certainly didn't. You know, I had watched the Colts, their previous game on tape, and then I'd also seen them maybe once or twice on TV. And, I mean, that offensive line was just so bad. So bad. I mean, thrown around by everybody. And Luck looks like he's getting, you know, battered like a ship in a storm. I mean, it was just brutal. And then for whatever reason, they held up okay. I mean, they didn't do... I mean, Rodgers was sacked more than Luck was.
I figured they'd play out of their mind after what I heard what Pagano said on Monday. This is going to be our defining moment of the season.
Okay.
I thought, whoa, a guy's going off on a limb like that, saying that. These coaches are, you know, so conservative. They don't say anything. When he said that, I said, wow, they're really going to come here and give a great effort. And they did, but I didn't think they'd have enough personnel to pull it off.
No, no.
And they wouldn't have had there not been 160 yards in kickoff returns.
Yeah, let's start there.
So, it wiped out the touchdown spread, and there you go.
So if your guy back in the day, if the ball doesn't get blown off the tee, you miss this kick return touchdown.
Yeah.
If it happens back then. It was so fast. 13 seconds, the Packers trailed 7-0.
All right, what did you see on the darn thing, Mike, the first one?
Well, first of all, we have to point out who returned it. Jordan Todman, fine running back from the University of Connecticut, fine state Connecticut. So Todman takes the ball. What is he? 1 yard out of the end zone, 99 yards. Yep.
Right.
So he catches it at the one.
Yep.
And he's on the left side, sort of, you know, around the hash area, right?
Let's talk about it from the Green Bay perspective.
Okay, so he's on the right.
Yeah.
And he's at around the hash, correct?
He's a yard off to his left of the hash.
Toward the sideline.
Yep. So okay. It's not even halfway between the hash and the number.
Right.
Just inside. Outside the hash.
And so what I saw next is basically what he explained after the game, which was that he saw early what he wanted to do. He said that the ball was in the air and he could kind of see where things were setting up, and he knew he wanted to cut back to the right.
Well, it's designed to go right. It's a designed right return.
Right. But he said he saw that the opportunity was there early.
All right.
So he goes, and then live, I didn't see exactly how it happened.
Neither.
But you turn on the tape, and it's just... It just looks like just awful. I mean, Jermaine Whitehead runs out of his lane, first of all. Then he gets blocked or pushed or dives or something into Kyler Fackrell. So then he's out of his lane. And if you watch it, there's like a 7-yard gap wide that Todman just runs through, untouched. Crosby looked slower than I expected from a guy that's a decent athlete. Didn't expect him to catch him necessarily, but I thought that was a poor effort. And he's gone down the sideline. Touchdown.
You know, sometimes you have one safety, sometimes you have two on a kickoff team. Guys who do not run down hard. Their job is to prevent the breakout. And I think Hyde was one of them, and I think number 11, Trevor Davis, was the other. I'm not positive of that, but I think they had two on this case. Hyde doesn't run well enough to be a safety, in my opinion. And Davis happened to be on the other side. So Crosby could not even do anything.
No.
He looked
a little slow.
He's aging. He's made a lot of tackles in his time, Mike. He's a good defensive player for a kicker, and he was horrible.
Yeah, not good. Not good. So that's one. That's 99 yards and a touchdown.
Yep.
fast forward to, what was it, the second quarter?
First play, second quarter.
61 yards.
Mr. Todman.
And it was basically the exact same thing. He fielded it again to the right, but he was 4 or 5 yards deep this time.
Six deep. 71 yards.
Comes out, goes to his right.
Return right again.
Same thing, up the sideline. And this was my favorite part. Where he gets tackled is within 2 or 3 yards of where special teams coordinator Ron Zook is standing on the sideline. And Zook just puts his hands on his hips and looks down at him as if to say, what in the world is going on?
Whitehead was benched off that play. He was benched by then.
They put Goodson. And yeah. He got blown up like all yes, heck on that play.
He did. He was touched on that. Okay, so then they scored a field goal there to make it 17-10 after the second one, and there's your 7 points.
Yep. So the right there, the spread is gone, and it's an even game. And so let's talk about what we saw the rest of the way. What did you see from the Packers receivers?
Jordy Nelson had problems with Rashawn Melvin, who's been cut I think the Patriots might... It was a revolving door with him 1 year. He might have been cut 3 or 4 times. I chart these transactions. I keep emergency boards, Mike, and it takes a lot of time, but he was just kept getting cut and brought back. I thought he battled pretty hard against Jordy Nelson. He's a big guy, and he can run. He's 6'2", I think, 6'1 and a half, and there wasn't much separation there. Adams, I thought, played pretty well. I gave him a drop on that little inside ball early in the third. Cobb didn't play till 12.5-minute mark of the third quarter. Janice was out there. Davis was out there a little bit. Allison a little bit. I don't know. How'd you see it?
It's an interesting scenario because with the way that the offense has been playing lately, where yards can be a little bit difficult to come by, and especially in this quick-hitting passing game, it seems that the effectiveness of Jordy Nelson is if he's going to be effective, it's different than from what I remember seeing on TV in years past, where he has really high yards per catch averages, where he's catching balls deep down the field, back shoulders, 15, 17, 18 yards. And this quick-hitting passing game, at least from what we've seen so far, he doesn't seem to be featured in it the same way that he would if the offense was clicking in a more traditional way. And instead, players like Montgomery, players like Devontae Adams, like you mentioned, and to a degree, Trevor Davis, but they haven't really used him a whole lot, seem like they fit in more. And this past game, Richard Rodgers. That was a surprise to me. I mean, you and I have discussed on this how... Well, first of all, let's just say this. He had, what, 60-something yards, I think, receiving in this game?
Mm-hmm.
And it took until this game, the 8th, to get over 100 yards for the whole season. And he needed 60 to do it. So, well, he only needed like 40, yeah. But still.
Yeah.
It's interesting. What do you make of this tight end situation this year?
I just want to see Jared Cook again, you know? I mean, he would have been a big player here. Seen him for, what, a game and a half? 2.5?
Yeah, I heard against the Lions.
Game?
2.5.
Yeah, game 3 that was, right? Minnesota was 2. Okay. Richard Rodgers is Richard Rodgers. I mean, he hasn't really improved. He hasn't slid. He's kind of reached a plateau, and he's all right. He is what he is.
And the 4 and 5 wide receiver sets don't necessarily bode well for a tight end. I asked Angelicchio that, the tight end's coach, and I said, you know, with the way that you guys have spread this out, quick hitting passes, dink and dunk, I said, is that detrimental when it comes to Richard Rodgers' contribution? Does it fit his skill set? And his answer, I thought, was pretty telling. It was, as long as we win, you know, that's what matters. And to me, that said, yeah, Richard Rodgers doesn't factor into this, but we're winning, so fine.
When do you think Cook's coming back, Mike?
I don't think he's going to play this week. I think there's a chance he comes back next week, which would be Washington?
Yes.
Yeah, Washington.
That's on a Sunday, and then Philly's on a Monday. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they could use him.
He practiced on a limited basis today. First time he was out on the field, you know, actually doing anything that resembled real work. He'd done some stuff off to the side, but this was the first time that he had... He had everything going for him. They cleared him to cut him loose, as McCarthy said today. And tomorrow is the padded practice. That's the big one, to see how he holds up. Same thing with James Stark. So if everything were to go perfectly, they could have, you know, a boost this weekend if everything goes swimmingly. But I'm not sure if that's likely at this point.
All right, let's go to the end of this game, should we?
Okay.
So the Packers are down 24-10, and Crosby gets a field goal, and then they're down 31-13 with 9:35 left, and the Colts play some prevent stuff, which never really. These games are all kind of.
Just rack up the yards. Orchestra. Rack up the yards.
Six plays, 75 yards, time of possession, 155, touchdown Green Bay. All right, so then the Colts trying to kill the clock, run three plays, three and out, they punt. Green Bay gets the ball back at 5:28, same stuff. Is this enjoyable football, Mike? I don't, regardless of whoever's doing what, seven plays, 80 yards, 159.
You just want to see another 6-6 game. That ends in a tie.
I do. I admit that. Is this thrilling football?
People like passing. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the most enjoyable brand to see, but people like when the ball is aired out and there's lots of points and
the
and
end
it's
of
exciting.
These, the end of these games, the pass rush is dead by then, you know, and there's no recourse for these defenses. And they just want to cut clock, and they can't cut clock. All right, so now there's 3:29 left, and it's 31-26. Green Bay's got two timeouts left. Do you think the Packers are going to get the ball back?
I thought they were.
Me too.
I didn't expect the Colts to throw twice.
All right, so now they run Gore for zero. They throw a bad incompletion. Bryce is in Luck's face on that blitz, I believe. And the ball was thrown low. Maybe I got the wrong play.
No, you're right. Yeah. Bryce leaped up really high. Yeah. I remember writing down. Boy, that was a pretty good example of his vertical leap and athleticism.
So Green Bay lets the clock run.
Right.
And it's 3rd and 10. I mean, this is it for the Colts. They've just given up two long touchdown drives. It's kind of sink or swim here. All right. And Capers rushes six. He goes all out. And it's the same blitz that was successful earlier, and they didn't pick up Clinton Dix, and he got an unblocked sack. So this time he's kind of unblocked. The running back gets maybe a glove on him. And you talked to Clinton Dix about this missed, let's use the word, opportunity. Okay, what did he say, Mike?
Well, first of all, he was pretty, he took it on the chin, said, I have to make that play. You know, there's no doubt about it. He said he got two hands on Luck. But the guy is so big and so strong, and you wrote about that in your scouting report. He's a massive, massive individual that it's hard to bring him down. And then Clinton Dix said, you know, for a guy my size, he probably actually weighs less than Andrew Luck does. Ideally, he'd love to hit him low, love to cut out his legs.
Right.
You can't do that anymore. Yeah. You can't hit him high anymore. So he said, I was left with trying to wrap him up like a bear hug around the waist. And he said, I took my chance. And I missed. And so he said, I have to make that play. It's a play that I want to make, I need to make if I want to be considered good in this league. And he was took it pretty honestly, pretty earnestly, too.
He handled it well.
Yeah.
Beautifully.
And now, I think part of the reason he held it, he took it that well, is because he knows that outside of that, he played a damn good game. Two interceptions, a sack. If he had been pretty bad all game and then had the terrible mistake, I don't know if he would have been so willing to accept all that.
Yeah, true.
So I think that offsets a little bit.
All right, so Luck stepped up.
So hold on.
Go ahead.
Let's say that play happens 10 times. How many times does Luck wriggle free out of 10? Same player, Clinton Dix, trying to drag him down.
And there was stuff in his face, too.
Yep.
There was other stuff coming at him.
And at his feet. He had to chop his legs to get out of there, too.
Well, maybe a better question. How many times do they get the first down?
Okay.
Seeing the rush is where it is.
Okay.
1.5?
Out of 10?
Yeah. Two?
I was going to say three.
Three. Okay.
I was going to be higher. I don't know.
All right. So I talked to Jack Doyle, the tight end, on the play. Now, on this thing, it was a zone blitz and 51 Fackrell. Doyle's wing position on the right, Luck's right, and Fackrell's outside backer way over on the left. And Fackrell came over to cover Doyle with a circuitous route over there. And I asked Doyle, what were they doing? He said, when I came off the line, I was just trying to find out who was picking me up. I saw the blitz, you know, but I had to get to the sticks. And then after that, I saw 51, and then I just had to make a move, and so Andrew hopefully was with me on the thing. He broke inside. Luck stepped up.
And then threw across his body because he was moving up and then took a step to his left, right-handed quarterback throwing back across his body. And one thing that I thought was pointed out pretty darn well on the broadcast, which isn't, you know, always the case, but I thought Sims's point about how Luck is an overhand thrower, doesn't really throw sidearm a lot like Stafford, that was pretty interesting, and I never thought of that, because if you're running and you're a sidearm thrower, it's easier to go across your body. Whereas if you're running and you're to your left and your right-hand quarterback trying to throw back to your right and you're overhand, it's a much more awkward motion than to be able to zing it sidearm.
Yeah.
And so as Luck steps to his left, throws across the middle to Doyle, that's a tough throw. I don't think you could make that throw back in the day, Bob.
And he kind of threw it low, and it was a 20-yard gain for Mr. Doyle. Now, now that we're speaking theoretically, I guess, what if Aaron Rodgers had been the quarterback on that play? Would he have skipped out of that collapsing pocket? I think so.
Okay, well, would you agree with me in saying that Andrew Luck is probably stronger, sturdier, but
2 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier.
But Rodgers is more nimble.
Yes.
Okay, so I think both of them get away. One with strength, one with agility. I think Rodgers can make that throw.
So if he skips out of it, though, he's not going to be throwing the ball to Doyle. He's going to have to find something else.
What do you mean? Why couldn't he just go forward?
Oh, no, there was a wall of people in front of Luck.
So he'd have to go...
left, right, away from Clinton Dix.
Okay.
And then he would have to do something, either run...
So him and Doyle, in that case, would have been going in opposite directions.
Yeah.
Right.
Doyle was moving right to
left. Much more unlikely throw.
Yep. So then he hits somebody else or he runs.
Yeah.
If he breaks the contain.
Right.
Pocket was really collapsed.
Difficult to run in zone coverage, though. Not as easy as if it was man.
Yeah. Okay, Packers call timeout.
Yep.
All right, they run Gore for two. He throws that 6-yard pass over on the left side of T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. came up short.
Well, it wasn't that he came up short. It was that he went out of bounds.
Yeah, but he tried not to.
Yeah, that wet turf again, Bob.
All right, the Colts call their first timeout. 2:21 left. They're going to talk about this. And so Rob Chudzinski, everybody knows the book on Dom Capers. He will not sit on his hands in that situation. He's going to bring it. He always does, Mike. And he brought six again. That's just, Dom, he said that to me several times over the years. He's going to attack. He's not going to just, you know, I don't know what you would say. But, all right, so Chudzinski knows, he figured he's going to get a blitz. And he alerts Locke. They got a time, 30 seconds to talk about it. And they picked it up, and they got, it's an empty blitz, and they got T.Y. Hilton over there against Gunter, right? Gunter's playing off. There's no safety help. He's got to play off. And T.Y. Hilton against Gunter, it's a mismatch.
Speed mismatch.
What are you going to do? Quickness.
Catches the ball, and the game's over.
Yep. Three knees, and that's it.
Okay, so at the beginning of that drive, A, did you think the Packers were going to stop them and get the ball back? And B, if they got the ball back, did you think they were going to win?
To get the ball back, I liked the Colts offense all day. I didn't like the Packers defense all day. Chances to win, I'd give the Colts right there 65-70% chance to win.
Okay.
What do you think?
I was going to say 60, so we're pretty close there. I thought the chance that the Packers get the ball back, though, was pretty good. I didn't necessarily think the Colts were going to be able to pick up both first downs. Maybe one, but I didn't think they were going to get two. Simply because I kind of thought they were going to go conservative and just hand it to Gore three times, in which case I certainly don't think they would have picked up 10 because the Packers' run defense was not bad that game. You know, Gore had 60-something yards, but I think it was on like 18 carries or 17 carries or something. It's not a very good average.
So, Mike, what's a worst offense? The Packers' offense in the previous game in those last 31 seconds, or the defense here in these final 3:29. They both lost. They both were the last possessions and resulted in defeat.
Well, I would say the defense. And my rationale for that is because when the Packers were trying to come back against the Falcons, they needed to score, right?
Yeah.
Now, the defense needs a stop, but the Colts don't need to score. So they could have helped the Packers in theory. They could have ran the ball three times with Gore, punted it away, and said, okay, we're just not going to let him get a touchdown. So in that situation where it's where the opposing offense is under no pressure to come at you and try and pick up first downs, they didn't have to. They wanted to, but they didn't have to. I think it's worse on the defense, personally.
Okay. Last week, after the Atlanta game, I think I said that Green Bay's chances to win were all they needed was a field goal to win, 31 seconds. They had to go about 40 for Crosby's attempt. 55%, I think I was saying.
And then I think we agreed that it was like 70% that they at least attempt a field goal.
Yeah. We saw what Matthew Stafford did in the lunchroom the other day. 23 seconds left.
Longer field.
Started from the same. Oh, where did he start from? The 20?
It was a touchback, so he started from the 25.
Well, a touchback after a kickoff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, 25. And Prater made a 58-yard field goal. He got it done in 23 seconds.
And then they won the game in overtime.
Stafford's done that about three or four times this year, Mike. What a season.
He's really having a heck of a year, isn't he?
His best ever. He's quite a player right now. So, okay. Well, they're both bitter defeats, you know?
No doubt about it.
All right.
So they're 4-4.
Yep. Yep.
Anything else you want to talk about from the Colts game?
No. You?
I think I'm good.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor. We'll come back and take a look at the Tennessee Titans.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So as always with these podcasts, I come here and the kitchen table is just littered with goodies. And I see you have a flip card here from, what is the date on this?
December?
December 23rd, 2012, noon game, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Why is this here, Bob?
It's the last time the Titans and Packers played, Mike.
I thought they played an exhibition game 2 years ago.
I love the way you use the word exhibition, Mike. That's impressive. Even when it's non-summer, you remember it, don't you? You learn your lesson well, my friend.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, they met 2 days before Christmas in 2012. The Titans came in with Jake Locker at QB. From that 53-man Titan roster, six remain on their current 53. Six, Mike. We got the punter, Brett Kern. We got a wideout, Kendall Wright. We got the starting corner, Jason McCourty. And we got a starting OLB, Derek Morgan. And two DTs, the great Jarrell Casey and Carl Klug from Iowa, the tenacious one. Well, it was a rough day for the Titans. 24 degrees. They had a lot of injuries. Four of their five starters in the O-line were down. And Mitch Petras, who was supposed to make his first start at guard, he was in a cab in Appleton. The cab flipped, and he played. He was uninjured, but he was a little shaken up.
Jeez.
They stayed down in Appleton.
Right.
So Locker, Dom Capers blitzed him unmercifully. He went after poor Jake. Jake threw some real beach balls out there. And the score was 55-7, Mike. The third worst loss in the Titans / Oilers 56-year history.
That must have been real painful for Mr. Ted Thompson, the former Oiler.
Yeah. They kept turning down tackles in the second half.
What do you mean?
They didn't want to get in front of Ryan Grant.
Oh.
Who was here on his last
legs. I thought you were talking
about
offensive linemen. They were just saying, don't play anymore.
No. Go out with seven guys.
Yeah.
Green Bay was down Jordy Nelson, and its top three running backs were down. They had signed Ryan Grant off the street, and he was 20 for 80 that day. Outgained the poor Titans 460-180. The Titans completed that season with a 6-10 record. The next year they were 7-9. And then the last 2 years they won 5 games, Mike. 5-27. So are the Packers getting a pushover Sunday at what it used to be called LP Field. Now I guess it's Nissan something or other, right?
I don't know. The last time I was there, it was LP Field.
Yeah, it's Nissan now.
Okay. I don't think it's a pushover. I don't think the Titans are a bad team.
Do we have to use the word Nissan? Can't we just say in Nashville or at the Titans Stadium? Why do we have to use these commercial names?
I don't know. What would you like to call Lambeau Field?
That's fine. That's not commercial. That's a guy's name. But Nissan and LP and all this, it's garbage.
So what do you call the Chrysler Center?
That's named after Fritz Chrysler, the longtime AD. He's like Curly Lambeau over in Michigan. You know?
I think it's named after the car company.
These commercial deals, Mike. All right, so we want to talk about the Titans?
Yeah.
They're 4-5. They're coming off a Melvin Gordon killed them out in San Diego.
Well, and two defensive touchdowns given up by Mariota.
True. All right, let's go to the O. It's all about Marcus Mariota. Second year, second pick in that 2015 draft, right behind Jameis Winston. Mariota's pretty good. He's not there yet. He's scratching the surface. He's had turnovers. 7 fumbles, lost 4, and a bunch of picks. Not a bunch, but he's 15th in passer rating. He's a tremendous athlete. 4.45 speed. He can turn it on.
Yep.
They have designed quarterback draws. They'll run a pure old option with the guy. He does a lot of things. His passing, it's hard to judge him because his wide receivers are so indifferent.
Right. You know what, this is a random tangent. You know what would be cool? And this would never happen, but if guys, once they stay in the league for 5 years, if they ran the 40 again, and then you could come up with a measurement of how many tackles it takes to take 1/10 or 1/100 off their 40 time. In other words, if a guy is tackled 100 times, does that automatically mean he's going to be a tenth or two slower than a guy who's only been tackled 50 times? That'd be pretty cool.
You know, teams used to have them run a 40 at the start of every training camp.
Really?
Green Bay did that.
Until when, do you think?
20 years ago.
Oh, okay. So 25? Not recently.
No. Now you'd have to shoot a player to make him run a 40. They do not want
do
anybody
James
to know
Jones
what their speed
ran
is.
Last year? 4.7?
He ran about 4.54 coming out.
Yeah. 4.7?
On a good day.
Yeah.
4.76.
Yeah. Okay, let's how about a fair one? What do you think Shields would run if he was healthy?
4.35.
Yeah, okay.
Little bit above.
Yeah.
All right. Their go-to receiver really is the tight end, Delanie Walker,
The
former 49er. He never hurt the Packers, but he's been gangbusters in Nashville. Wide receiver at where? Central Missouri, I believe it was. Converted now, tight end. He's not a blocker, but, you know, he's really smart, and he runs pretty good, and he's a tough matchup. Good player. They use a bunch of tight ends. They're constantly doing this stuff. And because they want to run the ball. And Fasano, he's been all over. Dolphin, Cowboy, he's okay. The receivers. You know, I don't know. They got rid of Green Beckham. They traded him to the Eagles in mid-August. They cut Justin Hunter, a tremendous talent, pair of second-round picks. I don't really know. These guys are very talented players, and Mike Mularkey got rid of them. I think if they had one of those players, I mean, who'd they replace him with? Trey McBride? And old Harry Douglas, the old Falcon. Senseless to me. I don't get it. But, all right, so what they're left with is three players that don't have great talent. Rishard Matthews, the old Dolphin. He's a tough guy. Strong hands. Not a vertical threat. You got a fifth-round pick, a rookie, Tajay Sharp from UMass. You know, he's had a pretty nice rookie year. He certainly has.
He broke all the the receiving records that Victor Cruz had, I believe.
He had 111 catches last year.
Yeah.
Beat Cruz's
record. Led the country.
Did he? Okay. Sharp, he gets knocked around by the jam. He's 194 pounds, 6'2". But he's not bad. He runs pretty good routes. But he can't get vertical either. So they sit on these people. Now, Kendall Wright once timed really well as a first-round pick, He plays in the slot.
Boy, I forgot he was a first-round pick.
But he got run down from behind in San Diego the other day, and he's not really a threat either. So Mariota, they got to give him a weapon. What they've done instead for the guy is get him two tackles. So what would you rather have, eh, Mike?
Tackles.
When you're as bad as the Titans, tackles. Take the tackles?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And then run the ball like they're doing and go play action. All right, Taylor Lewan came from Michigan. Considered kind of fake tough by a lot of scouts. Out of control, temper. Some scouts thought he was arrogant the way he played. You know, he's done pretty darn well. In fact, he's having an excellent year in protection. He's pretty good in the run game, too. And he's probably a top 10 or 12 left tackle already. On the other side, they took Jack Conklin from Michigan State. I hope they're not roommates. House divided, those Wolverines and Spartans, huh, Mike?
If you say so, Bob.
All right, Conklin.
You don't know anything about that, do you?
You think? Unfortunately, Pat is not listening to this show tonight. She's the Spartan.
Yeah.
All right, Conklin from Traverse City, Michigan. Pretty close to the UP, Mike.
Yeah.
The Escanaba Eskimos play Traverse City every year.
Okay.
All right, Conklin left as a fourth-year junior out of East Lansing. Not as talented as Lewan. I think he's purely a right tackle, but he's a good player. He's really a physical run blocker. I knew he would be. That really hurt the Spartans losing him this year. He's not bad in protection either.
Former walk-on.
Correct. Yep. Okay, so the tackles are good. I mean, these bookends are, you know, they're a match for Bulaga and Bakhtiari. All right, inside, they have good news on the injury report on Wednesday. Quentin Spain, their pretty good left guard, he practiced, and he's missed a couple games with a knee, I believe it is. So he might be ready to go at left guard. If not, and he's pretty good. He's a free agent, 330. Be Brian Schwenke, a center, who's spot started for 3 years. Schwenke's okay. Bad body, feisty guy. The center is Ben Jones, who they signed from Houston as a UFA in March. He's okay. He's the glue of the outfit. He's smart. Started for 3 or 4 years for Nick Saban at Alabama. And Josh Klein is the weak link. He's the right guard. Chance Warmack, their mid-first-round pick a couple years ago, out for the year with a hand injury. Klein spot started for New England for 3 years. You know, Bill Belichick always has pretty poor talent in the offensive line, but he cut him here. They claimed him on waivers. He's got a lot of limitations. He's a guy you can get after. All right, running backs. DeMarco Murray for Dallas. He's had two really big games against Green Bay, although he had a crucial fumble forced by Julius Peppers in a memorable play in that divisional playoff victory. Murray's got a turf toe, and it's probably going to be with him the rest of the year. It's a hard injury to get over. He did not play well against the Chargers. He's had a tremendous season. He's a very good receiver, both out of the backfield and as a split receiver. Derrick Henry was not playing enough. He should have been playing more. The big Alabama power runner, 6'2.5", big man. He's played well, Mike. But now he's got a calf injury, and I doubt he plays. And that hurts them.
And I was watching, when I watched their game from this past weekend against the Chargers, it's very clear that even though they still have a third-string running back in this Antonio Andrews, who's now elevated to second string, it's no longer a 1-2 punch. It's DeMarco Murray, and then when he needs a break, some guy that doesn't really do very much. And that's no disrespect to Andrews. He's just nowhere near the level of player that Henry is. So the ability to complement Henry and Murray is absent as soon as Henry leaves. They don't have a suitable replacement.
Let me mention this, Mike. On Monday, looking ahead to Henry's possible absence, they elevated David Fluellen from the practice squad. And Fluellen, just in doing the draft series last year, he's from Toledo.
Oh, yes.
He's a pretty good runner.
Killed the Syracuse Orange once upon a time during a game I covered.
You saw.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Fluellen.
He's listed at 224, 5'11". I know he had a good exhibition season. He's not bad. So he could get carries ahead of Andrews.
Okay.
We'll see. The fullback is a legit blocker, Jalson Fowler from Alabama. He doesn't play much, 10-12 a game, but he does strike a blow as a lead blocker on ISO stuff.
Okay.
Run the ball, play action. That's what they want to do.
Now, is that based on personnel, or is that the makeup of their offensive coordinator?
They're trying to protect Mariota. They really are, and that's malarkey. Who's the offensive coordinator? Oh, Terry Robiskie.
Yeah.
Longtime wide receiver coach, good guy.
And they split the play calling? How does that work?
No. I was told Robiskie does it all.
Oh, okay. I thought I read somewhere that they split it.
Maybe
he has input or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, but I think he lets Terry make the call.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, they got to run the ball. They're up against what has been a solid run defense.
Yep.
Can Mariota make plays with that receiving bunch downfield? It depends. All right. On defense, Dick LeBeau, 79. He was a Packers secondary coach under Bart Starr.
Okay, here's a question.
Bart Starr fired him. Do you believe that? This Hall of Fame coach got fired by Bart Starr. Okay.
Do you think that this is the oldest matchup of defensive coordinators in NFL history? LeBeau and Capers? Do you think there's ever been two older defensive coordinators that have faced off in the same game?
How old is Capers?
Let's see. I'll pull it up here.
65?
Boy, I don't know.
Yes, I do.
You think it's the oldest?
No.
66 for Capers.
There were older coaches back in the day, Mike.
Okay.
I think so.
All right.
Yeah. All right. It's all about Jarrell Casey, right, Mike?
No doubt about it. We talked about this back in the beginning of the season when they played the Vikings. I mean, he was just, well, granted, that's an offensive line that is just bad, but he was everywhere. I mean, you could put four guys on him, and he was still just pummeling that line over and over again. That was before Peterson got hurt, right? Peterson could go nowhere.
That was the opener, wasn't it?
Yeah, the season opener.
Now, in watching this Charger game, Casey was nowhere near as impactful. Not even close.
Nope.
I don't know if he's wearing down or what, but
I don't know. I wonder if it's because there's not a whole, well, I mean, they do have decent outside guys, but I didn't notice much of a push from their, we'll talk about them in a second. I didn't notice much of a pass rush from their outside guys against the Chargers either. And so I wondered if it was just because he didn't have much help.
Could be. You know, fresh legs coming off an exhibition season. I guess these guys wear down. He's only 6 feet, 1 inch. He looks like Mike Daniels. He's quicker than Mike Daniels. I don't know if he's as strong as Daniels. He plays as hard as Daniels. He's really, really quick, Mike.
Yes, he is.
And he can wreck stuff inside.
What's he got around him?
When they play base, but against Green Bay, you don't need base. That's Al Woods, the nose, but he'll never play. All right, the five technique and another run stopper is Daquan Jones from Penn State, like a third-round pick, I think he was. He's really pretty good. He's a tough run stuffer, and he can collapse the pocket. It's not bad. They come with the aforementioned Carl Klug, the little Iowa Hawkeye who's been there about 6 years. Tenacious, never says a word, very tough to beat, I'm told, in practice, one-on-ones. A good player in his own way. 20 snaps a game, he can give you pass rush.
Okay.
And Angelo Blackson, a 6'5", 318-pound athlete.
6'5", wow.
Yeah. I remember liking him before the draft, what I heard. He's from Auburn, 6'4", excuse me, 318. He's not bad. He's got some pass rush. So inside, their rush is good.
Okay.
Now let's talk about outside. I like their outside guys, Mike.
Do you?
It'll be Derek Morgan against Balaga and Brian Arakpo, the former Redskin, against Bakhtiari.
Okay. I just didn't see them getting much pressure on Rivers in this last game. I felt like he had time all day long.
Okay. Who's the better of the two? It's a toss-up. I see Morgan as a guy not real fast, not real explosive. He was a first-round pick when they were in a 4-3 as a defensive end, so he's had to convert to standing up. He's a bull rusher. He's going to get that long-arm, two-arm shot to the chest. Balaga's going to get that. Morgan is terrible in coverage, and he got exploited by Antonio Gates in that game.
Yes, he did.
All right, on the other side, Arakpo. Now, he still can run in his seventh year. He still's got that speed to turn the corner. He can get low against Bakhtiari. He's bendable, flexible. He plays the run, and he plays hard.
What didn't really click for him in Washington, do you know?
He had a bad injury.
Okay, I knew that.
Short-circuited him. I thought he played pretty good, Mike, early.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, he was all
right. Maybe for a first-round pick, I just didn't think it was it was what I expected. He played at Texas, right?
Yep.
And now he probably would have been JerMichael's teammate. They probably would overlap there, I think.
He's 2 years removed from, I think it was a knee, but I'm not sure. But okay. I think he looks okay now.
Okay.
They drafted Kevin Dodd, that young player out of Clemson, I believe it was, right?
Clemson, yeah.
And he broke his foot in the offseason, and he's playing now, but he's not really a factor. And, okay, inside, ex-Bronco Wesley Woodyard, Avery Williamson, the tackling machine. He's got like 40 more tackles than anybody else. And Sean Spence, a Pittsburgh high pick who had a serious knee injury. He plays some on dime. And who's their fourth backer, Mike?
Nate Palmer, Packers' former inside backer. I assume, based on the statistics I saw, he probably pretty much plays special teams, and that's about it, right?
Yeah.
He only has 5 tackles for the season. So, but good for him to catch on somebody's roster and stick a little bit.
He's a good guy.
Real nice guy.
Yeah, I like Nate.
Big Chicago Bulls fan.
Is he?
Big Chicago Bulls fan.
Problem inside, you know, Woodyard and Williamson are undersized, but they find the football. But they're not good in coverage, and neither is Spence. No. You can exploit that.
I kind of like Woodyard. He plays feisty to me.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I kind of like him.
All right. The problems they got are at cornerback.
No doubt.
Left corner's Parrish Cox. He stays on the left side. He's been with a bunch of teams. You know, he still can run. He's in like about his 7th year. And he's got size, 5'11 and a half, but he just gambles all the time. He just can't be disciplined and not go for a pick or a PBU. And it compromises the defense. If he would just settle down and play, he'd be all right. Jason McCourty. Who's the McCourty at New England?
Devin
McCourty. He's a safety now.
Right.
Yeah. All right, that's his brother. Jason, a 6th-round pick. You know, his ability's not bad. But he plays so far off these guys. He lacks confidence. He's afraid or something. He just plays so conservatively. He's just the opposite of Cox. And he has the ability to play, but he just doesn't trust himself, I guess.
Or does he not trust the people behind him? Could that be part of it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. The nickel is Bryce McCain, who's been around for about 8 years with several teams. You know, he once ran 4.32, but...
Wow.
At this point, you don't see that speed at all.
No, definitely not.
And he's not really very good either. So they got to have a cornerback, and they're going to have to do that in the next draft.
No doubt about it. How about at the back end of the defense?
Well, Rashad Johnson missed the last couple games, but according to the injury report, he's okay to go. Rashad's played for Arizona the last couple years, so Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy know a lot about him. I don't think the guy can run. Green Bay has exploited him for big plays. He's really smart. He once ran 4.51. He can't run. And if he's out there, Green Bay will somehow get a matchup on that guy, and it'll lead to a big play. They've done it before, and they'll do it again. The other three safeties, I don't know. I like Kevin Byard. They all play.
I do, too.
3rd-round pick from Middle Tennessee. You saw that, too, right?
Yeah, he looked pretty good against the Chargers. Very limited snap count, though. Doesn't play a whole lot.
No. 4.46, and he's kind of a smacker. I like him. All right, the others. Denoris Searcy, he's okay. Damian Stafford, the guy from Nebraska, I don't like him, Mike. He's stiff. I think his scout said he's a liability in coverage. So that's their D. I mean, LeBeau does all kinds of crazy stuff. 300-pounders walking around, Mike. I mean, he does more than capers. He blitzes 4th most in the league. He and Rodgers have, you know, they met in that Super Bowl, and Rodgers got the better of Dick LeBeau that day. I'm not sure if they've met since. I think they have. But he's a great coach.
Before we go on to the special teams, just one quick thing about the defense. How many draw plays did the Chargers run against them in this game? It was just relentless.
How many do you think? 6? 8?
Oh, more than that. I thought of the, I don't know how many carries Melvin Gordon had, but I think it was probably 17 carries or so, it seemed like.
Yeah.
I thought at least half of them were draw. It was just over and over again. Draw play, draw play, draw play. I felt bad for the pass rushers a little bit.
And they did not fit, didn't react well to that at all.
And Gordon made all of them look slow.
Yes,
he had good burst in that game.
Wow, yeah. Okay, Ryan Succop, the former Chief. He's okay as the kicker. Brett Kern, the punter, another veteran, about 8-year guy like Succop. He's okay. Mark Mariani, the dual returner, fans will remember him from the Bears last year. Used to be with the Titans. Now he's back. He makes good decisions, catches the ball. I think he's better than some scouts do, but he's okay. They fired Bobby April, really, and one of the top special teams coaches for a generation in the league. They fired him after the fourth game. I couldn't believe Mike Mularkey did that. He promoted Hoffman. What's his first name? Steve Hoffman. He's a kicking guru. And in 2005, when the Packers had a punter, B.J. Sander drafted in the third round from the Buckeyes, Mike. Sander, was he from the Buckeyes?
I don't know. Back when? When are you talking about?
05.
That sounds like when Mike Nugent would have been there.
I got to look this
What's
up.
What's his name? I'll look it up right
I
here.
I got the press guide, Mike.
Okay. Sander?
I'm Mr. B.J. Sander from Ohio State.
All right, you got it.
Kicked 14 games in 05. He was a bust. One of Mike Sherman's, one of the players that got him fired, but really.
2004 draft.
Okay,
so
yep.
So his last year was 03.
So he was injured, or I can't remember. They kept him as a second punter on the roster. He was so bad they wouldn't punt him. Came back the next year, and they hired Steve Hoffman to come in as a consultant in April, May, June. He had been with the Cowboys for years. He's a kicking guru, and now he's running their special teams.
He won the Ray Guy Award.
Well, yeah. All right, so that's the Titans, Mike. They're one game behind the Houston Texans.
What's the spread for this? Do you know?
7.
No.
No, 2.5.
Yeah,
Green Bay by 2.5. I'm sorry.
Okay. Green Bay 2.5.
Yep.
They've done pretty well as road favorites under McCarthy, haven't they?
I would have to look at that. I don't know.
Okay.
They do pretty well everywhere as favorites.
That's true.
He doesn't blow games like that. So the Packers got to have it. The Titans got to have it. It's a titanic struggle.
Well, that's a good one. I want to bring up one more thing real
quick.
Yes,
sir.
So one of the things that jumped out to me was from this game was, even though the Titans ended up losing, I thought that Mariota's command of the two-minute offense was pretty impressive. At the end of the first half, they went, let's see, what are they? At the end of the first half, they got the ball with a minute and 32 seconds left, went 75 yards and a touchdown. The second half, they got the ball with 2:06 left in the fourth quarter. They went 75 yards for a touchdown. I asked Mularkey on the teleconference today, was that an outlier? Do you feel really confident in your two-minute offense? And he said, I'd have to say yes. I said, it's not the first time we've done it this year. We feel really comfortable in that scheme. So the reason I bring that up is because in at least part of that area, the Packers have not done well at all. And that is right before halftime. So second quarter, last couple minutes of the half, the Packers' defense has been just abysmal. It was even worse than I thought, and I went back and looked at the numbers. They've played 8 games this year. Of those 8 opponents, 7 of them have began a drive with 5 minutes and 44 seconds or less on the clock. All 7 have scored.
How many touchdowns, Mike?
We have a 7-play, 75-yard drive for the Jaguars that began with 3:05 on the clock. We have a 2-play, 75-yard drive by the Lions that featured the 73-yard touchdown to Marvin Jones. There was 1:10 on the clock when the Lions took over. We have a 5-play, 97-yard drive by the Cowboys and Dak Prescott, 60 seconds on the clock, through the touchdown pass to Bryce Butler right before halftime. The Falcons went 7 plays, 75 yards, aided by a roughing the passer penalty to Dayton Jones. And Indianapolis went 15 plays, 96 yards, back shoulder pass from Andrew Luck to Dante Moncrief. That drive took all but 11 seconds of the 5:44 that was on the clock when the Colts took over. 7 teams have scored a touchdown, have scored points on a drive that began with 5 minutes or less on the clock. That's crazy. 7 of 8.
That is.
The only ones that couldn't do it were the Bears.
Did the Bears have a chance?
They had the ball with 6-something left and didn't score.
Okay.
So what causes this? Okay, a couple things. The one that jumped out to everybody was third down and the inability to get off the field by the defense. So I went back and looked at it. What do you think the Packers are on third down this season defense-wise? In other words, what percent of the time do other teams convert on third down against the Packers?
37%.
Bingo, 37, right on the mark. Where do you think that puts them in the league?
Middle.
Top 10.
Oh.
Top 10 in the league. So 37%. On those drives that I mentioned that ended with points for the other teams, What percent of third downs are opposing teams converting?
On all those seven scoring drives?
On those seven scoring drives combined, what percent of the time did those teams convert on third down? Keeping in mind that
in
the
those drives?
In those drives.
90%.
75. So 37% of the for the season, 75% in those situations, more than double. The Colts went 3-for-3 on third down, including, and this to me was one of the more impressive plays of the game, 3rd and 9 from his own 4. Luck is just standing in the pocket in his own end zone for seconds, it seemed like, and then he guns it over the middle to Dorsett for a 13-yard gain in the middle of a zone coverage, and Capers called that one of the two critical turning points in the game for that defense. Because if they don't convert that, the Colts are punting from their own end zone. The punter's probably got his back up against the end line, and everything's totally different.
Three timeouts.
So that's interesting. You put together the confidence the Titans have in Mariota and production in that area with what seems like a major deficiency for the Packers. Keep your eye on the last 4 or 5 minutes of the second quarter on Sunday and see what happens.
Boy, how bad was that defense on that 96-yard drive?
Whew.
Green Bay leaves the field with 3 timeouts.
Just remarkable.
What an embarrassment.
It was bad. It was bad. Anything else about the Titans?
No. Mm-mm.
All right, so we glanced over the questions, and we both have stuff going on later tonight, so unfortunately we got to keep this short. The first one here is a fun one, I think, for Bob. This question comes from Ed, and let's see if we can find out where Ed is from. Ponte Vedra, California, maybe. Or Florida.
Florida,
Ponte Vedra Beach, that's right. He wants to know, will Fondy Springs win another state title? What is this all about, Bob?
Fond du Lac St. Mary Springs, a Catholic school down there. When I was covering preps in the late 70s, they were in the Fox Valley Catholic Conference. Then it later became the Fox Valley Christian Conference.
Yes, the widely recognized FCAC.
FVCC.
Oh, okay.
The same coach then is the coaching now, Mr. Bob Hyland. He played at North Dakota State. He was a guard. I had never seen a guy quite like this when I first met him in 77. He's won I don't know how many state titles. In the WISA, the old private organization, he probably won 4, 5, or 6. And now in the WIA, he's probably won another 5 or 6. My former colleague and boss, Don Langenkamp in Green Bay. Don used to, he told a story one time. He cited a Vetus Ripp, R-I-P-P. He was a coach maybe at Menasha St. Mary. I hope I'm right, or Oshkosh Lourdes. And a Vetus, according to Don, he would always say, "Beware the Springers." Don would tell that story. They're the Ledgers, Mike, and they are the Ledgers are a legend in Wisconsin sports high school. He gets a lot of kids out of Fond du Lac. They play physical beyond belief. I've seen Hyland break clipboards over his knee several times on the sidelines. I've seen him scream at me after games. I dealt with the guy when they were playing Green Bay Promontre and DePere Pennings. Those were unbelievable memories for me. And he's still going, and he's still dominant. I tape one of the sports shows every Friday night in Green Bay, and I try to stay in touch with the high school sports. I love it. And so I see Springs highlights, and they're awesome again. They hammered Laconia a week or two ago in the playoffs, so I hope they go all the way again. Sorry, Mike, but now you know the story, okay?
Would you like to coach high school football, Bob? I mean, I'm not saying, like, would you, but or will
I'd like
you?
I'd like to cover it again.
Okay.
Beware of the Springers, Avitus Rip. A-V-I-T-U-S. Thank you, Don Langenkamp.
Okay. All right. Now that we've gotten that nonsense out of the way, we can continue with my question on the podcast, which is this question comes from Andrew Bernhagen. We thank you, Andrew, for stopping by. He wants to know, what's your second half season prediction? I think the Pack will be okay. All right, Andrew. So I went through the schedule real fast. Here's the games that I think could give the Packers problems. I think they're going to beat the Titans. I think they could lose one of the games at Washington or at Philadelphia. I don't know which one, but I think one of those could cause some problems, especially with a holiday sandwiched in between. I think they can beat the Texans. I think they lose to Seattle. So that's 2 losses. I think they beat the Bears. I think they lose to the Vikings. That's 3 losses. I think they lose to the Lions in Detroit. 4 losses. So I've got them 8-8 at this point. I don't think there's much in the way of things that we've seen so far that lead me to believe it will be significantly better than that. I guess if Eddie Lacy or Shields came back in week 15 and really could provide a shot in the arm, that could change things a little bit. But I just think they kind of are what they are, and that's more or less a 500 team right now. So I'm going with 8-8. All right, well, we've reached the hour mark. We've overstayed our welcome. And a little Gnarls Barkley on the way out, Bob.
Yeah, let's close it out, Mike, and then take it on to Nashville, huh?
All right, see you guys next
week. Thank you.